Mihi Nui, and a very good morning to you, Auckland. It's 5 minutes past nine, and you're listening to 104.6 Planet FM and Keep Auckland Beautiful. My guest today, calling all the way from Australia, is Paul Frasca from Sustainable Salons. Good morning, Paul, and welcome to the show.
Great, thanks for having me.
It's great to hear from you, and it's actually great to do my first interview offshore. And even though I'm talking to you in Sydney, you guys are doing a lot of incredible work in Auckland. But before we get to Auckland, who are Sustainable Salons? What are you guys up to?
Yeah, so look, Sustainable Salons is a very unique organization that my partner and I started. Well, it's been in operation now for over 3 years, but I remind people we actually wrote the plan of Sustainable Salons over 10 years ago. And look, Sustainable Salons is a really unique comprehensive resource recovery service. We're designed specifically for the salon environment. We like to reward our clients for being part of the program, so they earn lots of reward points. But 100% of everything we collect out of the salons goes back into local communities and charitable programs. So let me break that down for you a little bit there. So first of all, we're a comprehensive resource recovery service. What does that mean? Is that we actually provide up to 6 bins that go into the back rooms of salons. So not just hair salons here, we also service beauty salons, dog groomers, and clinics.
All right.
A little range of different types of salons. Basically, we offer a door-to-door pickup service that our drivers then come around collecting the bags out of each of the bins and comes back to our depot, and then we do all these really cool, amazing projects with it. Like I said, 100% of everything we collect out of the bins goes back into local communities and charitable programs.
Okay.
So it's not like we...
Okay, so you're recycling, for want of a better word, 100% of what you collect. What's the what percentage of a salon of on average are you collecting from a salon? Did I see 95% on your website? So you're getting the majority of waste out of a salon, right?
Yeah, we're taking up to 95%, and in some cases we can get up to 100%. It really depends on the salon there. 95% is what I call the main things that every salon has coming out.
Right.
Today. For example, in a hair salon, over 68% of their waste is metal, so mainly aluminium foil and color tubes. This actually is the biggest bulk of the waste.
Really?
Look, I always remind people, like, for example, in New Zealand, over 400,000 kilos of aluminium foil, just from foiling hair, goes into landfill each year. And no one's ever really realized that that can actually be infinitely recyclable.
It is.
It's a metal like no other. And also, we make money from that. So we actually collect money from selling it. And every time we sell that waste, 100% of all proceeds goes to an organization called Kiwi Harvest. And Kiwi Harvest, I'm not sure if you know who they are, but they're an amazing organization that rescues food for Kiwis most hungry.
Indeed.
And we don't just give them the waste, we give them the cash.
So, right.
Yeah, so that's why it's so important that I teach hairdressers, guys, this metal that comes out of your salon is valuable, and I'm going to show you how we can turn waste into food.
Wow, and most people don't realize how valuable aluminium is.
Tell me about it. I still get hairdressers saying, I've been told by my local recycler that this aluminium foil is not recyclable, and I just can't stop laughing.
I know, it's nonsense.
This has to be the most craziest words, and why this even message goes out there. It's a metal, no different than gold and silver. I like to remind people, it's like the Terminator 2. Remember when he melts?
Yes.
He turns back into a liquid?
That's
exactly what's happening.
That's
the
right.
Aluminium foil.
And the impurities burn off, and it's brand new.
Yeah.
Now,
1 kilo of aluminium will come back to 1 kilo of aluminium infinitely. It's amazing resource.
You can tell from my accent I'm American, right? I'm a Yank.
And aluminum, you say?
We say aluminum, right? But most people don't realize that when they capped the Washington Monument in Washington, D.C. all those years ago, they capped it with the most precious metal on Earth, aluminium.
Aluminium.
The top of that thing is not gold, it's not silver, it's not platinum or titanium, it's aluminium. It was the dearest metal of the age. In that century, in that century, and of course we laugh about it now because we think, "Oh, aluminium cans—they're in every single soda machine." But
oh,
yeah,
it's It's just crazy. And the value of aluminium is different around the world, but we can get up to around about $1.10 per kilo, you know. And so you think about that, with 400,000 kilos of aluminium in New Zealand going to landfill each year, you know, that could be providing
and that's
over
just
800,000
right?
meals to New Zealand just by putting that foil in our metal bin. That's it.
Wow.
We do the rest.
Wow, is all I have to say. Right, so that's that's metal. Now, you mentioned hair. You mentioned hair because I think there's some cool stories about hair. What are you doing with the hair?
Well, this gets hairy.
Right.
Basically, so the hair, we break up into two groups because you've got hair clippings and you've got ponytails. Both are hair, but are actually two completely separate stories.
Okay.
So I'll start with the hair clippings. So that's typically from, you know, someone like a guy getting his hair cut.
That's me getting my hair cut. Yep.
That's right. And you're just having a trim. And most ladies go just to get a trim, right, or just change their style. These are not long enough to be used in our ponytail program, but they're hair clippings. And what really fascinated Evelina and I about this is, was anyone doing anything with hair? And is there a future for hair? Because if you talk to most hairdressers, they say, I just cut it off, I sweep it up, and I throw it in the bin. There is no use for hair. So we really got fascinated about this, and I'll tell you where it kind of even started. I grew up on a rose farm, and my grandfather used to talk about hair being, you know, used on the roses. And I used to always think he was nuts, you know, crazy old Italian man talking about hair and roses. I never thought twice about it and forgot about it for the next 10, 15 years of my life. But then a lot of people, as I was going through, because I'm a hairdresser, going through my hairdressing career, I was like, talking, and they said, oh, I love using hair on my roses. And I'm like, but why? Why do you do it? And they say, oh, it's really good for the soil. And no one really had any real answers why it was beneficial. They just knew it was good. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Then something happened which totally blew me out of the water. So this is about 15 odd years ago. In America, there was a huge oil spill happening, the BP oil spill.
Mm-hmm.
And this is now going away from farming now into oil recovery. And there was the oil spill was happening, and there was a guy called Otti, who was a barber, and he was sitting watching this oil spill happening in front of him. And he says, well, why don't we use hair to soak up oil? Since we're always washing it off with our shampoo,
because
why don't
it's
we
so
use
good
it in the reverse?
Yes.
Yeah, why don't we use it in the reverse? And basically, he invented a product called the Otti Mat, which was a simple piece of mat that can actually soak up oil really well. And it didn't get a lot of traction, and it struggled in America there. But an organization called the Matter of Trust thought about, well, how do we create a low-cost version of this and maybe start shoving the hair in stockings? So they started pushing the hair into stockings, and this kind of went viral because of how good the product was working. So you think about a one-meter stocking, pushed in with lots of hair.
So fill think of as the leg of a stocking with hair.
Yeah, you know, just got to get your creative minds on now. And basically, they showed that these stockings were soaking up so much oil that it was actually quite groundbreaking. So this really triggered my partner and I to say, well, where's this all going? You know, it's been many years now since that oil spill, and I was wondering, well, did this ever develop? Was there any research actually done? Is there any tangible evidence that this was actually better than, you know, other products on the market? So we contacted a university here in Sydney to say, well, we want to throw a project at you and see where we go with it. And they got really excited because they thought, this is a new resource. It's untapped, and we're always trying to find new resources to look at and to see, does this actually work? What we found out in the last 2 years it doesn't just work, it's remarkably good. And let me put this into perspective. Like, we've now collected booms from all around the world to compete, you know, so to put our hair boom versus other booms around the world, and we found out ours is by far better than any other boom. And the main reason why is because the hair boom absorbs the oil, while other booms just contain the oil spill.
Right, they're barriers, not sponges.
Exactly. And this really got the attention of a few others in the Oil and Gas Association, where they were saying, well, you guys are really onto something here, because, you know, over $5 billion worth of oil goes into the oceans each year. You know, they would really like to collect that back. So using hair in a boom could actually solve this problem. So we've now done lots of research. We've got now our first paper being published this month. So now universities from all around the world can now follow on from this research. But we're not stopping there. We're actually turning it now into manufacturing. So we're actually now using the hair that we're collecting from salons. We're manufacturing a product, and we're getting it out into the market. And this is showing now that we can now make hair a resource of the future.
Beautiful. Now, I'll pause for just a moment, because we're about halfway through our interview, and just say that I watched the, it was like a 10-minute doco short on your website. And I'll also say it's sustainablesalons.org, no .au, no .nz, just .org. And there's that doco is really cool, and you can see somebody stuffing a stocking stuffer, and actually making a section of boom. And I just wanted to point that out for listeners who go have a look at the website, because all the things we're going to miss today because we don't have enough time are also on that website.
Totally, yeah.
Oh, and the other thing, while I'm hawking the website, it's also the 13 stores in Auckland who are currently part of the program, and that number is growing.
Yeah, definitely. We started in Auckland just only 8 weeks ago. We've already got a long list of salons now looking to join the program.
Awesome.
And I remind salons we give us time, because it's not a product. It is a service that we come and educate your staff.
That's right.
And once your staff have been educated, all the bins have been provided, then the program can take off. We don't like to just start straight away where you don't have the right bin infrastructure and the right education, because the last thing we need is contaminated hair bins, contaminated metal bins, where basically we can't use that hair for its purpose or metal. And
that's
so on.
Right. That's right. So, ponytails, tell me about that. That's the other use.
Ponytails. Well, this is really interesting. And as a hairdresser, I always like to start this off this way, because as a hairdresser for myself, I would have been a perfect example of someone who would have loved to have sent in ponytails for children with alopecia or cancer during my hairdressing career. And I asked myself, why haven't I ever sent in one? And I contacted a few charities who were collecting ponytails to say, what's the story with ponytails? Is there enough ponytails coming through your stream each year? And they said, no. We actually struggle to get enough ponytails, because communicating this to the consumer and to hairdressers is very expensive. So we rely a lot on just people to get really emotionally attached to a story that they've heard, and then they want to cut their hair off and send it in. I said, that's great, but how many do you need? They said, well, this was in Australia at the time. They said, look, for children with alopecia, we need about 4,000 ponytails each year.
Wow.
And I said, how many are you collecting? They said, we collect about 1,000. So I said, what? So you're only collecting a quarter of what you need.
So there's room to grow.
Yeah, they said, look, this is like to a child who's waiting for a wig to be made, this can be a huge problem. It's like waiting for an organ. Like, it's really horrible, right?
It's because a big deal for these kids.
Yeah, they will not go out into public until they've got their wig, you know. It's a very emotional thing, especially with alopecia. So basically, I thought, well, this is a problem, because I would like to send them to you. And I asked, why are you not educating hairdressers? And again, that same thing came up, funding. And I said, well, our program could really help here. So to fast forward now, just within the first 6 months of us educating hairdressers directly and getting it into the curriculum, we were blown away, because in our first 6 months, we collected 400 ponytails. We thought, we're like, wow, it's working. We've got all these ponytails coming in. But something happened after that, which we totally didn't expect. It went viral. In the next 3 years of our program, we collected over 25,000 ponytails.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we realized we now just became the largest donor in the Southern Hemisphere of collecting ponytails, just by educating hairdressers about how to spot a ponytail. So this is just a client who came in to get a haircut, and all of a sudden, the hairdresser said, look, before I cut your hair, I'm actually going to actually collect this hair, you know, half of the hair I'm cutting off, first before I cut your hair, just so we can donate it through. And clients were blown away. They're like, oh, my God, I came in for a haircut, and all of a sudden, I'm donating my hair.
That's right.
So this just went viral, and we're really proud now, because we're supplying enough hair for now. I think up to around about 60 to 70% of all medical wigs now in the Southern Hemisphere is coming through our stream.
It's a wonderful feeling. As I was saying when we spoke pre-interview, I did that in the late 70s. I donated my hair for a wig, and it was a surprise to me. And it was, I still get emotional about it. So I can understand how this would go viral. You surprise somebody in the salon and say, actually, you're donating to some kid.
Exactly. Really, it really changes people's lives. And I laugh because even in barbershops where the guys are all cool, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, whatever. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, you're giving them a pink certificate to say thank you at the end of their haircut. And they're like, that's cool. That's cool. And I'm like, yeah, it is cool.
As they're misting up a little bit. Yeah.
I just think it's hilarious that, you know, this really, you'd have to have something wrong with you to not really get emotional if your hair off to someone in need, you know.
That's
you really
right.
Didn't have to do much, just get your hair cut.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, yeah, it's a really great movement at the moment, and we're really stoked in New Zealand with the amount of salons that we've already got on board the program and how many ponytails are already coming through our stream, you know. So a big shout out to all the salons now in Auckland, and also we've just recently, I think this week, stretching our territory down to Hamilton.
Nice.
So Hamilton, there's already about 5 salons about to come on the program down there, so we're very excited to have them on the program.
That's
fabulous.
And over
time, we'll stretch across New Zealand with the whole program. So it's only a matter of time before we'll cover the whole country.
Well, let me ask you what I perceive to be a tough one. How do you manage the chemicals? Because we're kind of, you know, we're big recyclers in New Zealand. Plastics, paper, the razors, even the electronics and metals, that all makes sense to us. The hair is a cool addition. We don't think about recycling hair. What do you do with all the chemicals?
Yeah, this is a really good question, right? Because hairdressing is a highly toxic industry.
Oh, exactly.
One of the main chemicals we use is called hydrogen peroxide, which most people have heard of, but it's quite toxic, right? And we need this to actually color hair. So
that's right.
Hairdressers, we can't live without it. Our clients can't live without their hair going blonde. So basically, this is a product that we've got going down our drains all the time. But I thought, you know, and Evelina, when we were looking at this, saying, can we find a solution? What we realized in the chemical waste, the chemical recycling, is that the only alternative was to have a 1,000-litre drum put in the back of your salon, and you could put your chemical waste into this drum. And I thought, 1,000 litres, it was so big. And I said, yeah, and when I talked to all the chemical recyclers, they said, that's the best we've got, because nobody wants to pay to have a smaller solution because it's expensive for us to come and collect it. And
that's,
I thought,
right.
Well, we've already got a network of vehicles driving around collecting all these bags from salons. Why don't we look at putting a 20-litre bucket a part of the program?
Now, is this so, just for the peroxide to start with anyway? Is this a peroxide bucket, or is this for everything?
This is for everything. We take hydrogen peroxide, semi-permanent, permanent.
Right, but you're not mixing it all into one bucket, are you?
Yeah, we actually had to have it tested. We actually had to have it all tested to make sure. Well, this has already been happening on clients' heads all the time, so it's not like it's a bomb, because when we actually mix your color, we're mixing your tints and your hydrogen peroxide all together.
That's right.
And it's going on your head.
No, I'm not worried about safety. I'm worried about how do you process it when you take it away?
Once it goes through processing, so how it works is we provide a salon with these 20-litre buckets. They're putting as much of their excess chemical waste through the bucket. We then collect it. It comes back to our depot where we're then collecting and storing it up to 1,000 litres or 2,000 litres at a time. Then we work with specific chemical recycling organisations that then collect it, and then they will then turn that chemicals back into water just by bringing it back to a pH neutral.
Right.
And that's done through solvents.
Because hydrogen peroxide will come back to water in certain circumstances.
Oh, yeah. Like, look, I remind a lot of people, your hydrogen peroxide and your shampoo, all these are sitting around that 90 to 95% water. It's not like that is all chemicals in there. It's mostly water in there. So it's how to extract that out of the chemicals is the game. And this is not rocket science.
Now, was all this going down the drain before this?
Down the drains, into the oceans.
Right. To the water treatment plant, which may or may not deal with it well, which may or may not deal with the chemicals.
And when we say water treatment plants, what we found out is that that we couldn't actually find out or guarantee that it was going to plants. This is where it gets very confusing.
Because a lot of the grey water goes to the stormwater network, not to the Poo Water Network.
Exactly.
Yes. No,
exactly.
I know exactly how that works. And that's true in Auckland. A third of Auckland has combined sewer and storm. But most of Auckland has grey water going to the storm sewer and not to the wastewater system.
It's a huge problem, and it was actually very hard to get some clarity about that. And it's funny, even for the water companies, where they say, look, we just don't. It's such old networks of pipes, it's very hard for them to actually even understand where it's actually going. And this was quite concerning to us. So we thought, look, it's our responsibility to try to divert as much of this chemical waste as possible from the drains, so we don't have to worry about where it's going, so we can control it and actually get it back into a chemical recycling facility to actually turn this back into water. So what actually happens here in Australia, we actually sell that water back to the government, and they actually use it as a part of their sprinkler systems when they're laying tarmac. So they're laying roads to keep the dust down.
Right.
So and that way, major contracts.
Yeah, you don't have to make it potable, you just have to make it safe. And then they
can
spray it on the roads.
Yeah, I tell people it's not actually, it wouldn't probably go back into your drinking water.
Yeah, it's not potable water, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, fascinating.
So, yeah, I think it's important that we start looking at all these things, right? With small business like hairdressing salons, like beauty salons, where we're using a lot of chemicals all the time, that we need to start looking at ways of how to divert these chemical wastes. You know, I think this has been something that's been overlooked for a very long time, and it's very important we start to make progress with this today, right? Because, you know, the more and more we're seeing more salons coming on streets, on roads, where, you know, population growth is growing all the time, there's only more and more chemicals going down the drains that needs to stop.
That's right. That's right. So, what other stories have you got for me from the salon world? Because actually, it's a big business. I mean, it's a huge industry.
Yeah, we are definitely one of the largest industries in any country around the world. And I always like to remind hairdressers, we're also a very secure industry to the whole movement of AI and things, because, of course, you know, every industry is being disrupted at the moment. But hairdressing is kind of lucky because it's an art and a craft. It means that you always need that human touch. So hairdressing holds strong within, you know, I would say will hold strong over the next 20 years of this whole disruption period of what's happening in industry. So salons, we make up a huge part of the population. You only have to go to any main street and you'll see there'll be just as many hair salons as there are cafes on
wow,
any street.
Wow, really?
Next time you walk down the street, just count the amount of salons that you're there, and you'll realize, wow, there's probably 10 salons on every main street.
You know, being a bloke who goes to the same barber once a month, every month, I don't even see it, hey?
Oh, most people they've just been a part of your daily life. But, yeah, we make up a huge part of the working profession. And again, it's one of those jobs that's very creative, and hairdressers are very passionate. You know, we love what we do. It's a feel-good job. It's always making
yes.
the client feel good. They walk out. So it's one of those jobs that's very satisfying.
Well, yes. And as you say, it's going to be relatively immune to the next wave of automation simply because the personal touch is such a key aspect of it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's an important part I always like to highlight to hairdressers is that, you know, your job's going to be around. So you pick the right career.
Yeah, absolutely. And sure, they might create some robot who can give me a perfect number two buzz cut, but most of it aren't going to wear that.
I don't know if I want... do you want a robot holding a razor near your...
I know. The thought is horrible, but we're going to let them drive our cars and our buses and our trains soon enough, so... yeah. Now, you do collect razors and other metals...
Yes.
And plastics. Now, most of that's going through the traditional kind of recycling pathways, is it not?
No, not at all. We actually work with a whole range of different plastic recyclers. So as we grow within New Zealand now, we'll be working with a diverse range of plastic recyclers in the future. Because what's happening in the plastic world at the moment is probably what you're all seeing, just like where China is now saying no more plastic, you know, we don't want you to send it to us. This is a big wake-up call to countries like New Zealand, saying, guys, you can do this internally. You don't need to send it offshore. We have some amazing plastic recycling companies here in Australia called Plastics Forest, Replas, that are actually making, for example, at Plastics Forest, they are manufacturing a product that actually protects our MBN, which is a board, which is a hard asset board made from shampoo bottles, plastic bags, that can stay underground for over 500 years. It will never degrade. It will never break down. This is what we call a hard asset plastic. At Replas, they're actually a huge manufacturer now of furniture.
Yes.
So government furniture. So when you go sit in a park, you'll see the park bench now that will be made from recycled
plastic. And you mentioned that. I'm going to steal a moment of your time and say that that's where all the soft plastics recycling program plastics in New Zealand are going. They're going to Replas to be made into furniture. And we're trying to encourage local governments, are you guys listening, to buy that furniture. It's not happening. And what it means, what it means is we're dumping our soft plastics in Australia. Just pointing that out.
Good, and it's exactly right. And we are, so the plastics coming from the salons, especially the soft plastics, are all getting shipped back to Australia. And it doesn't need to be that way. But what I think New Zealand needs to do now is to recognise that, yes, we need to support a company like Replas, and we need to start looking at this type of technology in our own country.
The issue for that
government
is...
government needs to get behind it.
Well, the government is behind it. We're only collecting 3% of the soft plastics, and we cannot justify a Replas plant in New Zealand yet. We will when we're collecting enough of it, but we're not. We're only getting 3% of the soft plastic.
Yeah.
And so for right now, shipping to Oz is actually the same thing to do economically for everybody, including the Australians, because it just adds to your stream. We're not actually that big a contributor even to your stream.
Yes. And what's the big change here, like an organization like Sustainable Salons, is that, see, we collect plastics as a single source. So what the problem is within what I call the standard mixed recycle bin is it's very hard for the MRF. So when your mixed recycle bin is being sent to the big recycling centre, they've got to put it through this very expensive machine to sort it. And that's one of the main reasons that very little soft plastics even gets collected, because it's actually nearly impossible to separate within these facilities. It's easy to get metals.
Oh, we don't even collect it here. Paper. We don't even allow it in our mixed recycling because it jams the MRFs.
Exactly. See, what we do differently is, see, we have a whole bin dedicated to it.
Yes, so do we now.
It's collected as a single source.
Yes, our soft plastics are collected as a single source at the grocery store, completely separate from your household recycling.
At the grocery store, how do we get this not just being a grocery store where it's an initiative that you have to take it? What we're doing is putting it inside the business.
Oh, no, it makes perfect sense to me. And we're starting to do that here. We're starting to put it into businesses where that makes sense. But, again, we're only doing 3% at the moment.
Oh, and that's why there needs to be more organizations just like Salons for other industries, you know, where they're tackling small business recycling and saying, you know what, we can provide a specific bin set up within the business that can collect it as that single source. And that's really going to be, you're going to change from 3% to 30% overnight, just because you're going to...
It could happen
really
very quickly.
It. Exactly. Like what we showed in the hairdressing industry, rapidly we're now changing the whole mentality of the whole industry about metals, paper, plastic, hair. And these are people that never really thought about, you know, oh my God, what do I do with all this? It's just that we introduced it to them and they just got so
ran with it. Now, I'm afraid we are out of time. I know you're finding that hard to believe, aren't you?
Sorry, I talked too much.
No, that's all right. We've got a half-hour show. But before I let you go, if somebody wants to get involved, and I'm shouting out to hairdressers and salon managers and even dog groomers, since you mentioned them, locally. In fact, I know a couple that I'm going to call myself. Do they go to your webpage, sustainablesalons.org, and get in touch? Is that the best way?
That's it. You jump on our website. There's a part there where it says request a meeting, and they fill in their details, and then one of our representatives in your local area will come visit you and explain the program, how does it all work, and how to get on board.
Fabulous. Well, Paul, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I love your program. Keep it up. Keep up the good work. And I'm thrilled to hear that it is slowly spreading across New Zealand. That's wonderful.
It started. So it's great to be there. And we're really stoked to have had Auckland as our first territory off the ground. And, we are growing across the country. So if you are in Wellington, Dunedin, Queenstown, I know you're shouting out to us now, and we are coming.
Cool. Thanks again, mate. Kia ora.
for listening. If you've missed anything in today's program, don't forget, you can listen again online at any time. PlanetAudio.org.